precious day.
For this precious day.
Welcome. Good morning. My name is Katie Kingry Page, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. You're welcome here, no matter who you love, no matter how you define yourself, wherever you come from, and whatever burdens you carry. We are a community of seekers bound together by our common humanity. This morning, we continue our vision series of Sunday services. A couple of years ago, we came together as a community to think through our vision of who we are and where we're headed. We developed the following statements to guide us. At the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, we are a safe haven for spiritual, intellectual, and emotional growth, an incubator for the next generation of UUs, vibrant, open, and inspirational in what we say and do. We're a bold model of love, compassion, social action, and justice for ourselves, our society, and our planet. We're builders of bridges across faiths and boundaries to honor our shared humanity and common values, and we are a visible beacon of liberal religious messages of hope and meaning in our local community. Today, we focus upon our vision to be builders of bridges across faiths and boundaries. Our service will include reflections by one of our community partners in social justice, Menfoy Lewis, as well as our fellow UU, Jane Pelletier, and our Reverend Jonalu Johnstone. Before we begin, I'd like to take a moment to ask anyone who has a guest with them that they'd like to introduce. Please feel free to raise your hand. We're happy that you're here, new or longtime member. Does anyone have a guest they'd like to introduce? Yes. These aren't exactly guests, but we do have some longtime members in our midst who most of us thought had moved away to Washington State.
Do we just say hello? Hi, I'm Charlie Kempthorne, and this is my wife, June, and we're longtime members. But the last 6 months, we've been in Olympia, Washington, and we've moved there. But this will always be home, and it's wonderful to see so many friends. People we love, family. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan Adamchak. This isn't really a joy or a concern, but I see that the notice about the book group is mentions you can call me, but the phone number is incorrect. So contact Lori if you need to get in touch or look for my number in the directory.
That's a perfect segue to our other announcements. And if you haven't already looked in the order of service at the announcements there, there's a special page on how to get connected at UUFM. If you are not connected, if you're not sure when things are happening and what's happening, please see that message in the order of service along with other important announcements. The Unitarian Chalice is a symbol of hope, a light to shine our values to the world. Michelle Dorminey and her sons, Darian and Ryan, offer us opening words today as they light the chalice.
Good morning. I'm Michelle Dorminey. Can you hear me? Okay. All right. I'm going to read a poem called The Bridge Builder by Miss Will Allen Dromgoole. The Bridge Builder. An old man going a lone highway came at the evening, cold and gray, to a chasm vast, both deep and wide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The rapids held no fear for him. But he stopped when safe on the farther side and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow pilgrim near, you're wasting your time building here. Your journey will end with the closing day. You never again will pass this way. You have crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build this bridge at even tide? The builder lifted his old gray head. Good friend, in the path I have come, he said, there follows after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. The rapids, which held no fear for me, to that youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I have built this bridge for him.
The opening hymn is 1023. It is around, and there are 12 people around the room who will help lead it. Sopranos over here, altos over here, tenors back there, and basses back there. And so we'll sing it through a couple of times, and then we will sing it as round. So stand up. We'll sing it through a couple times, then we'll do it. That's four, because it's four parts, we'll do it four times.
Building bridges between our regions, our reach out to you.
Altos lead this bunch down to about here. Oh, about here, probably. And the tenors lead this bunch, and the basses lead this back here. Are we ready? So we do go through it four times. Ready, sopranos? Up front here? All right.
Building bridges between our divisions. I reach out to bridges between our divisions.
As a community, we share one another's joys and concerns. If you'd like to share personal news, whether happy or sad, please raise your hand.
Good morning. Kelly Richardson McBee. I had hoped that Stefan would be here. Unfortunately, he has been unavoidably detained in Kuwait for a while. He will be, however, flying into Manhattan on Wednesday. So, this is an open invitation to anybody that would like to welcome him back. His flight gets in at about a little after one-ish or so. Please see me afterwards if you'd like to be part of that welcoming delegation. So, we look forward to hopefully seeing him next Sunday.
Leah Sarah, my birthday is this week on Wednesday, and I'm pretty excited about this.
Great. 10 years old.
Awesome. Awesome.
Christopher Renner. I received a phone call this morning. My last living uncle died during the night. He had suffered a massive heart attack last week and had been put on a respirator and those kind of things. And talking with my cousins through the week, they decided that wasn't the way to go. And so they took the machines off on Friday, and he died during the night. So, you know, a piece of history passes on. I have another concern. This concerns all of us. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock, the Taxation Committee is going to talk about a bill that's going to destroy public libraries in this state. And if you aren't informed, go to my Facebook page, and I have information about it. And I might even send out an email with some contact information. But the idea is basically to cap taxation abilities of local towns so that public libraries will no longer be able to be funded. That's the goal.
Ann March, in hearing the word respirator, I wanted to thank everyone who took part in the death and dying. I don't know if it was like a little workshop that Linda Krager and John Liu held for us on, was it Thursday? Anyway, we were thinking maybe to make it more of a congregation-wide event. If anybody's interested in doing that, maybe talk to one of those ladies about, you know, further action on along those lines. Thank you.
I'm very happy to be one of the people signing up as a new member today, and I thought one thing to share with you in this political season. I attended a school very much like that the Obama children attend, and, I can tell you a lot of things about it, but as you can imagine, it's a pretty interesting background to have.
Gene Severs. I'm thrilled and humbled to be in a couple of galleries in Kansas City. NSECA, the National Ceramics Conference, is putting about 8,000 plus people, clay people, in Kansas City. So literally every gallery in town, even the Nelson Atkins, will have clay of some sort, sculpture, fine craft, pottery, whatever. But the opening is Wednesday evening for the Thornhill on the Avila College, so I'm be going up there to celebrate with almost 30 of the 37 of Yoshi's graduates over the years, and his wife Esther, and probably Seiji and Nina, their children will be there. So a big week for me, and I'm humbled to be part of it.
Drew Venom. For anybody that hasn't heard, Amber's grandparents died around the beginning of the year. These are the ones that lived at Meadowlark that we took care of. We do also have good news for anybody that hasn't heard or seen. Amber is pregnant with twins who we're expecting in early summer.
Hard to top that.
We hold all these events, as well as those other joys and concerns in the room which remain unspoken, in our hearts to lighten the heavy loads and to amplify the joy.
The choir will come forward, and we're going to have our picture taken, which is, I don't want to tell you about it, but we have to have our picture taken, so we'll be honest.
I'd like to ask the children to join me up front, please. Young at heart or young in years, either way. Good morning. Good morning, kids. I know some of you, but I don't know all of you, so let me say hi and tell you that my name is Katie, and I'm really happy to be with you this morning for the story for all ages, except that it's not really a story. We're going to do something a little different this morning, and it starts any second when those guys in the back get the music going. Was really fun. Whew. And let's talk a little bit about what just happened. What did we do? What just happened? Yes.
My brother kept not letting me dance.
You were being held back by another? Oh no.
The booty part started.
There's a booty dance going on? All right. Any other thoughts here on... Yes.
We were dancing.
All right, so we were dancing. Who was dancing first? I was. Was I alone?
Yeah.
Okay, and for a while. Believe me, it felt like a while here. It was really only a couple seconds. But what if I had just kept dancing alone through the whole song there? What do you think? Would it have been a dance party? Would it have been just a lone nut up here dancing?
Yes.
It's okay.
Yes. Yes.
That's a yes. So who was the first person to join me dancing? Did anyone notice?
I think it was Jessica.
It was Jessica. And who? It was. It was Jessica. So I owe Jessica a big thank you. And who might have been the first kid who started dancing? Did anyone notice?
I tried.
But again, you were held back from dancing. Did anyone notice who the first kid was who started dancing?
I think it was Ryan.
Okay, so it sounds like I have a lot of thank yous to give here to Jessica for not letting me be a lone nut up here. I had no moves rehearsed, so I was putting myself out there. And then I have some thank yous to give to my first kids who joined me, whether they were Cade, Ryan, Darian, you in spirit. I knew you wanted to dance. So I want to talk about that just a little bit. I was the leader of the dance party, right? But without those people who joined me, without my first follower, Jessica, and without my second follower, Ryan, Darian, or Cade, I would have just been up here dancing alone through the whole song, right? Okay, that's not great, is it? So if I want to start a movement, it's not just about me. It's not about me getting up here and doing something. That person who begins to join me and makes it look like fun, and now I'll reach out to some other people who made it look like fun, all of you out here in the crowd, you made it look fun. Thank you for doing that. That's what made other people want to get involved too. I want to ask you guys a different question. Did you like the music?
A little bit.
I liked it, but it's not my favorite.
Can you tell us what your favorite kind of music is? Oh, no, no. Okay. So some people might have liked a little bit, and other people might have said it wasn't really my favorite. Does anybody have a more favorite kind of music than this? I've got volunteers, yes.
J-pop.
Okay, all right. And well, over here we have another favorite music.
I like remixes of songs.
So you like an extended remix? And if we'd had that of Kiko and the Lavender Moon, it might have been even better. Anyone else have other music they would have preferred to dance to? Yeah, your brother does, maybe. Jake, you have other music you would have liked to dance to? Maybe? Okay, well, the point is, even though this might not have been your favorite song, or even your favorite kind of music, we all got up here and we were able to dance together, right? So in spite of our differences, you decided it looked fun enough to get together and do this. This is the spirit of getting things done and making change. We can cross those boundaries, we can cross those bridges to come together, even if it's over our differences and it's not doing things that might have been our first choice. I want to give all of you a round of applause and thank you for helping me to dance this morning. Thank you, kids.
And grown-ups.
Been dancing, we've been celebrating, we got something to celebrate here. We were going to welcome today some adults who have become Unitarian Universalists in our congregation here by signing the membership book and indicating their wish to walk with us. So a few times each year we welcome new members into our congregation. People can make a commitment to membership at any time based on their particular inclinations and experience by talking either with membership chair Shirley Hobrock or with me. And now's a good time to recognize new members since we've just completed a Path to Membership class, and I'll call the names of those who have joined since our last new member welcome and invite them to come forward. Michelle Dormany, Renette Gehring, Rob DeLong and Belle Feddersen are out of town, so they're not here. Glenna Burkle. We're also welcoming back Deidre Greeley. And this morning, actually, Eli and Kim Martinson signed, but I don't know if they... I think he had to go home. They've got a sick child. Anyway, we'll welcome them another time, probably. So membership in a UU congregation is defined by the congregation. It looks simple because all we require is to sign the membership book. We hold no creed, nothing in particular need be believed or recited. At the same time, membership in this congregation can be difficult because you've joined a community searching for truth when truth can be elusive. Membership means you're part of a congregation struggling for justice, knowing that the struggle can be long. Membership means that you've joined with a people who strive to live in loving relationship with each other. And these are not easy things. I congratulate each of you on your willingness to take this step. So do you, the new members of this congregation, freely enter into membership of this fellowship, accepting the privilege and responsibility of membership? Now, to the gathered congregation, each new member brings unique joys and sorrows, skills and abilities, thoughts and beliefs to our community. With every new member, we become a new congregation. Do you welcome these people into membership?
We do.
So we accept each of you fully into our ranks and formally extend to you the fellowship of this congregation in recognition of the bond that already exists between us and the hope of that connection growing stronger every day. And joining this fellowship is but a beginning. We are a new and more diverse congregation thanks to the presence of our members, new and long time. Please know that no congregation is perfect. A time may come when the fellowship may disappoint you. A time may come when through action or inaction you fail the fellowship. Please know that the covenant between us offers the hope of healing as long as we stay in relationship with each other. The power of covenant does not mean it doesn't matter what happened. It does assert, though, that what is important is what happens next. You're a part of us, and we of you, and may your joy, your days, our days together be joyous.
Renate Gearing.
Glenna Burkle.
I'm Deirdre Greeley.
It's nice to be back.
Michelle Dormany.
Thank you. Sorry, sure. Thank you.
Each month, we contribute our offertory to a community need. This month, our Helping Hands Sunday offertory will go to benefit Wonder Workshop here in Manhattan. I do not believe we have a representative of Wonder Workshop with us today. If I'm wrong, please raise your hand. Nope. Okay, so for those who may not be familiar with Wonder Workshop, let me just tell you what I know. Probably many of you are familiar, and you've taken your kids over to Wonder Workshop and been a part of some great things. We've got someone who wants to speak. Yes, Diane?
Well, I just want to say Richard Pitts does a wonderful job. Oh. Is there a microphone still? There are people who have had their kids be active, so they're better. They know more than I do, so...
Hello, it is working. I'm going to hand this over to Diane, who has a lot of experience, or we have another, yes? Okay, fantastic.
Okay, Michaela Severs. Richard, who runs Wonder Workshop, has been a family friend for many years. He's very active in the community and has a lot of the same values for social justice and equity among all different sorts of people, giving everybody a really good chance at life, I think. So the Wonder Workshop program is for school-age children up through about 13 or 14 years old, I think. And I was a part of the program myself for at least 3 years, I believe. And, you know, I, in a lot of ways, was kind of a more shy kid. And growing up at my mom's vet clinic, I had mostly interactions with people who were much older than me and actually didn't have a lot of peer-to-peer contact outside of school. So that was good. It's great for developing a good world sense because Richard is very knowledgeable, and he's a great source both with personal experience and with everything that he's done and advocated for over the years. So I don't know if there's a general point breakdown, but I loved it. It helped me grow a lot. They do activities anywhere from visiting museums to historical sites and talking about, we talked about Juneteenth, which I had never heard of and hadn't heard of in school even when I was like a 10-year-old at least. So different things that you might not otherwise get exposed to as a kid. And meeting different people in a group of various ages with various backgrounds. It's a really great experience for children. And the Children's Museum, which is new since I've been through the program, is a very interactive, hands-on, affordable way for people to get involved and kind of, you know, experience our world firsthand and really have the great connection with, you know, putting these really sounding, you know, really good sounding concepts of justice and equality and, you know, being nice to your neighbor. And it puts it into reality, really. So that's, I guess, kind of my summation.
Thank you very much, Michaela. That was an excellent summation. And I just want to say, before we begin our offertory, I'm aware of Wonder Workshop as one of a handful of places in Manhattan that are great supportive places for kids to be when there's not school, when their parents can't be with them. We have just a handful of places that fill that need here, and Wonder Workshop is one of the most excellent. So I will add also, if anyone in the room would like to make a donation but they don't have cash or check with them, you can always see Kathleen Oldfather after the service. She will have a credit card payment system available. Okay. Great.
Hello, I'm Jane Pelletier, and just once again, today we're looking at the portion of our vision statement that says, we are builders of bridges across faiths and boundaries to honor our shared humanity and common values. For those who are new and might not know me, I need to tell you that I am both a Roman Catholic and a Unitarian Universalist, which I know is unusual. And which automatically makes me a bridge in my person between two traditions. Enough. I was going to say something else, but I'll let it go. I didn't leave my Catholic faith behind when I joined the fellowship because my personal Catholic theology and spirituality favor orthopraxy, an alternative orthodoxy, as it were, that emphasizes lifestyle and practice over doctrinal matters. As such, my wisdom sources are many, in addition to Scripture. I see the work of religion to religio, or religament, or bind together in that fundamental wholeness which is at the heart of everything. I might call that wholeness God. Others, of course, would not. Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson expresses that wholeness this way. We are all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically, and to the rest of the world, of the universe, atomically. And our Unitarian Universalist principles stress respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Of course, the challenge is to live out of our UU tradition and construct bridges to honor our shared humanity. I have seen so many instances of this in the several years that I have been a part of our community. For example, I've been so impressed by the RE program for the teens this year that has them visiting other religious congregations. I assisted with the 3 weeks of their Catholic experience and accompanied them when they attended Mass at St. Thomas More Church. Others of our members helped with the experience regarding traditions they had knowledge of. Taking one's own body into an unfamiliar space, what a concept as a way to learn by experience and to put a human face on the other. It made me wonder how I, as an adult, could have, or even how I resist, such a bridging experience. So much bridge building is done through our Social Justice Committee. For example, sponsoring just a few days ago presentations by Sister Simone Campbell, along with a number of other, mostly religious groups, having a common interest in the well-being of others. My other church, Seven Dollars, was one of the sponsors as well. Another bridge building. About 3 years ago, our fellowship did a book study on the book Spiritual Ecology, The Cry of the Earth. After participating, I recommended the same book to one of my Catholic book groups. Following that study, one of the group members began putting a short practical statement on environmental issues in the St. Thomas More Weekly Bulletin. She's now in her second year of doing that. I also participated in the fellowship's book study on the new Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. In response to that book study, our fellowship established a scholarship to help a person who was trying to get reestablished after a period of incarceration. This book study was also a catalyst for our interest in racial disparity in policing matters. John Exdell has been our bridge into and from the wider community on that matter. Our Helping Hands collection every month, which we just did, is a practical way to put our bridge-building vision into action. We welcome members of the Manhattan community to address our congregation on needs and in turn give what we can to service agencies and other organizations which share our values. By the way, were you not proud when Stan Ward said last Sunday that he knew we would not question the dignity of those in poverty and their rights to have needs met? The Happy Kitchen Breakfasts on Friday mornings are a joint effort of our fellowship, Seven Dollars Catholic Church, and St. Paul's Episcopal Church. It doesn't matter which cook or server is motivated by Jesus' words, "I was hungry and you gave me to eat," or who is motivated by the UU principles, or our vision statement, or the pancake maker who is motivated by all three. What matters is the praxis, the doing. Rumi says, "Set your life on fire. Seek those who fan your flames. That is why I like this community. We fan the flames of social, environmental, and economic justice in one another and reach out to fan them within the wider community as well. And in contact with other churches and community or university groups, we find our lives further set on fire and the passion for justice grows and grows."
Thank you, Jane. Jane mentioned the efforts that John Exdell and I have been involved with in the Manhattan Riley County Coalition for Equal Justice, and we have here with us this morning someone who is also on that coalition with us, who's going to say some words to us, Mwemfa Lewis, who is president of the Black Student Union from K-State.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Thank you for welcoming me here. It's been a great experience so far.
I've been on the committee for, well, at the beginning of this year, starting my turn as a Black Student Union president, and it's been quite an experience kind of getting to interact with Dr. Exdell and, of course, Jonalu here, because we all come from different aspects of Manhattan, different kind of communities. So, of course, you know, I'm the student coming from the Black Student Union, you know, stressing about finals and classes and whatnot, and, you know, they come from their various backgrounds as well, but it's really incredible to see people from different backgrounds work on an issue that affects so many people in Manhattan. And I think that's what's important about building bridges and building relationships is, you know, you can leverage so many different people in different communities to make a difference. And that's what it really takes. You know, one group can't do it alone. It takes several people standing in solidarity to make a difference in other people's lives. And two, also, you have to realize, you know, sometimes it's not always about me, too. So a lot of times, you know, even though an issue may not directly affect myself or even my close friends or anything like that, I realize just being a community member, of course, being a Christian, that, you know, even though it doesn't directly affect me, it still plays a part into my community. And I have the responsibility to make a difference for that person, to build the bridge, like what's been said, and to connect people so that we can all come together and make a difference in social justice. So I've had the great opportunity to do that. I've gotten to interact and meet a lot of different people I thought I never would get to. So, you know, build bridges. That's what I'd say. Build bridges. But thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Please rise as you're able to sing hymn number 148, Let Freedom Span Both East and West.
Let freedom span both east and west, and love both south.
I spoke in front of the Human Rights and Services Board, representing the informal group of 14 Manhattan ministers who are supporting inclusion of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people in the city's anti-discrimination protections. The vote of the board was 5-1 in favor of recommending that the City Commission make such a change in the law. Now, as committed and passionate as I might be on this issue, and I am, and as supportive and consistent as this congregation has been on this issue, we couldn't have done this alone. We've been working with the Flint Hill Human Rights Project and with ministers affiliated with Methodist, Congregationalist, Presbyterian, Disciples, Mennonite, AME, and Episcopal churches. Talk about bridges across faith and boundaries. We need this kind of collaboration because if you include all of our UU members plus our children, we make up only a minuscule proportion of the population of Manhattan. And many of our members live outside of Manhattan, so it's even a more minuscule proportion. Even if we grew to a full 1% of the population, we can't have much influence through our numbers alone. It's a good thing we have friends. Indeed, as we look at the needs of the community that we talked about last week, as we consider the call of our values and principles, we are driven to have an impact. And there is no way to do that unless we are not only strategic, but even more important, cooperative with others who share our values around particular issues. How do we do that? Now, I learned a lot about it through congregationally based community organizing. Many of the principles come from Saul Alinsky, the 20th century founder of modern community organizing. One of his teachings was that there are two forms of power, organized money and organized people. So if you don't got the money, you got to organize the people. And ultimately, there is only one way to organize people, and that's to get to know them and find where your interests coincide. And what I learned in community organizing is that you have to be continually meeting with people individually and in small groups to identify shared interests and potential leaders and ways that you might cooperate together. And such an approach actually comes naturally in a community the size of Manhattan, where, as I learned from the Riley County Police Department, you never meet anyone only once. I've been impressed by the cooperation in the religious community here. Founding Shepherd's Crossing, for example, to have an organized response to a problem I have encountered in every community I've ever lived in. People in poverty who go from church to church asking for help. How do you know how to distribute funds fairly without someone overseeing the effort community-wide? And as I say, I've seen the problem everywhere I've been, and I have never seen such a well-implemented effort to solve the problem. It seems that in Manhattan, people are anxious to address problems when they identify them and are willing to work together to do so. So we have a really good context to fulfill this part of our vision statement, to build bridges across faith and boundaries to honor our shared humanity and common values. And still, there are ways humans resist building bridges. Sometimes, when we first meet people, we see only the ways in which we're different. And I assure you that I have many theological differences with the other ministers who signed on to the anti-discrimination ordinance. I doubt we could put together a theological paper we could all sign off on. And those are the differences that are readily apparent through the labels of denomination. But they don't matter. Another thing I learned from community organizing is that if your group looks like they don't have a lot in common, if they come from a lot of different faiths, if they're racially mixed, if they speak different languages and live in different parts of town, that really makes the establishment nervous. When you have a group like that, and the established institutions and influential people see them as more powerful because they're more broad-based. And what's more, sociologists tell us that diverse groups come up with better solutions than homogeneous groups do. In the natural world, healthy ecosystems are characterized by tremendous diversity and interaction. Animals and plants find and create niches where a system is rich and complex. Monocultures are problematic because if a factor affects a single organism, everything breaks down. Diverse ecosystems adapt and evolve. And in the same way, human diversity leads to adaptation, creativity, and resilience. So the more we can work together across substantial differences, the more effective we can be. Plus, it's more fun. I am genuinely curious about differences. What makes one person convinced of the existence of God and another completely skeptical? Why do some people like to live in the country and others prefer the city? What hobbies capture someone's imagination, and how do I understand it if I look at it and just think, what? What experiences shape someone's ideology? How does their experience come through in their theology? What makes people love purple? Exploring such questions enriches my life. Adlai Stevenson said it well. Here lies the power of the liberal way, not in making the whole world Unitarian, but in helping ourselves and others to see some of the possibilities inherent in viewpoints other than our own, in encouraging the free interchange of ideas, in welcoming fresh approaches to the problems of life, in urging the fullest, most vigorous use of critical self-examination. Building bridges requires something of us. We have to learn to deal with difference. That is, we have to confront the limitations of our own personal experience. As we encounter others who have grown up in different places, who worship in different ways, who come from different racial and ethnic origins, we have to question our own assumptions about the world and how it works. We're challenged to let go of biases and stereotypes. When I worked in Oklahoma City on congregationally based community organizing, the members of the Unitarian Church I served had some initial difficulty with some of the theological positions expressed in various meetings. Now, these meetings included Catholics and Protestants of many different stripes, the occasional Jew or Muslim, Hispanics on headphones listening to the Spanish translation, and a broad representation of the racial demographic of Oklahoma City. I had never seen such diversity in a gathering of religious people in that city. And most meetings, large and small, started with a prayer. And the expectation was that whoever was praying would pray out of their own tradition. And if the prayer didn't match your tradition, you were respectful and waited for your own chance to pray. Now you can imagine how that played with some of our more humanist Unitarians. First, they were challenged to sit through prayers in Jesus' name that assumed a God intimately involved in the life of the community and making that community better. A great exercise of our value of tolerance. And on top of that, my UU congregants knew that they might be called on to pray. A couple of our younger women who were very committed to the organizing effort came to me panicking. What do we do if they ask us to pray? And after I had them take a couple of deep breaths, we explored what the purpose of prayer was in those meetings. From our theological perspective, it was meant to focus all participants on our highest values. We agreed that a prayer didn't need to be delivered directly to a deity, but could be the opening of our hearts and minds to our unity and purpose. And I suggested reading through some of the readings in the back of our hymnal and selecting or writing something that they felt expressed both their UU principles and their own personal commitments to the work. And they did. And for years, these women carried in their wallets short written statements that they could take out and read when they needed to. And it did come to pass that they were called on to pray, and they had something to say. And it came off fine. But they were building bridges across faith. The readings they tucked in their wallets celebrated our shared humanity and common values. They let go of some of their disdain for prayer because the goals we developed together with Christian groups were too important to let theological differences dislodge them. Some of the people we worked with learned to honor our differences by praying in more inclusive ways. But that took time. When we came together, we had to come together as our authentic selves. And listening to a prayer did not have to threaten our identity, and we could not expect others to set aside who they were. So this process of stretching across faith boundaries may challenge us more than we expect. It sounds so idyllic in the abstract, the kumbaya moment. In reality, we may want to know and cooperate with people whose faith dictates ideas different from our own about the roles of men and women, about sexuality and same-sex marriage, about the role of religion in the public square, about the importance of God and Jesus, and still we will find something in common with them. Now, often I've heard you disparage the idea of tolerance as not enough. We can't simply tolerate differences, we need to celebrate them. Okay, fine. But I can't celebrate all the differences that I know are of value. Many of them, yes, but that doesn't take us far enough. I want to go where I have to be tolerant, where the differences actually stretch me. I suggest if we're not at the point of actual tolerance, putting up with ideas and practices that we don't really like, then we have not extended ourselves far enough. If we only reach as far as we can celebrate with an open heart, we're not reaching far enough. Now, the idea of religious toleration dates back in our tradition to at least 1568, when King John Sigismund of Transylvania, the only Unitarian king in history, issued the Edict of Torda, which, among other things, specified, "No one shall be reviled for his religion by anyone. And it is not permitted that anyone should threaten anyone else by imprisonment or by removal from his post for his teaching." Now, in those days, remember, wars were being fought throughout Europe over religion. Lutherans, Calvinists, and Catholics struggled not only for souls but also for territory. The idea of tolerance in such a context required a huge shift in thinking that quickly reverted to religious persecution after the death of Sigismund. But the impulse to distinguish ourselves religiously has not diminished, though the amount of bloodshed over religion has diminished somewhat. But still, there are Muslims who war among themselves between Sunnis and Shias. It seems that all the Sunnis and Shias agree on is that the Sufis are not real Muslims, and the Sufis have a problem with that. There's a new Irish Republican army revving up. Hindus have been radicalized to dismiss other religions in India. And these may be the extremists of each religious group. But as Sanford Cloud, CEO of the National Conference of Christians and Jews, has written, faith communities in America often don't have much to do with each other. Many Americans live in geographic, cultural, economic, and social isolation from one another and are ill-prepared to speak honestly across racial, religious, and cultural lives. To them, others' ways are strange ways. To get over the strangeness, to extend hospitality across religions, and to actually get to know one another well enough to band together requires concerted effort, tolerance, and patience. We're resisting cultural norms. We need to be able to make ourselves radically open to the other to fulfill this part of our vision. And now, some weeks ago, earlier in this series, I challenged us to think about our inclusivity, the need for us to examine the fellowship's culture to see if we find biases around race, class, educational level, political affiliation. And that examination not only prepares us to open our doors wider in terms of who we welcome here, but also prompts us toward tolerance so we can act with people and organizations out there in the world who are different from us. So as an example, I turn again to the work I was involved with in Oklahoma City. Actually, I'll go back to a time before I was even there. In the late 1990s, some of our UU members there felt that the city needed conversations around race, and the logical place to do that was through dialogue among churches. They actually managed to gather people from both an African-American church and the mostly white First Unitarian Church, and the effort was not fruitful. In fact, you could call it a catastrophic failure. Members of the African-American church asserted that if we didn't talk about Jesus and if we didn't agree on Jesus, there was nothing else to talk about. The Unitarians, on their part, didn't care to talk about theology at all and only wanted to explore race relations and brick walls on both sides. The effort went down in flames. But in contrast, 20 years later, First Unitarian Church of Oklahoma City has a strong relationship with a primarily African-American church called Divine Wisdom Worship Center, a congregation serving former gang members and people with a history of incarceration. And the alliance came about because of shared interests, working together to learn how to organize, and determination to change the city's harsh treatment of people in jail. The Divine Wisdom leaders knew that their meetings with the sheriff went differently when they had white professionals with them, and the First Unitarian folks learned more than they wanted to know about the state of race relations in Oklahoma City. Together, and with other church groups, they researched the jail budget and administration, as well as citizens' experience with the law enforcement system, and achieved a win recently when a judge threw out the process for how jail inmates were being forced to pay for their jail stay. It couldn't have happened if we hadn't come together across racial and religious boundaries. This is a good place to note, though. It's not about getting credit for being there. If the efforts become too calculated and the strategies too geared to look at us instead of to solving the real problems of the world, then they inevitably sow division. The bridges across faiths and boundaries are flammable. And ego, grandstanding, and seeking credit burn down the bridges. How many times have I seen movements disrupted because everyone wants their particular group to be the central planning group and wants others to fit in around their agenda? So, while we need to be able to talk about who we are as Unitarian Universalists and why our values and principles lead us to the work we do in the world, we also need to recognize that we're not doing the work because we want credit. We're not in it for photo ops, but to accomplish good. We are building the bridges and engaging in the world because our religious values call us to. One of the calls I see in Manhattan is that there's no strong interfaith community. The ecumenical Christian community operates well together and welcomes our participation, even if we aren't really Christian. And there are Jewish, Islamic, and Zen communities, as well as sprinklings of adherents of other faith traditions. But there's little communication and cooperation across faiths. There are practical reasons for this. Lack of staff in small religious communities, for instance. There is, though, a need to have a voice that's broader than a Christian voice in the dialogue, a community-wide recognition that religion means more than Christianity would help us UUs, would also benefit other non-Christian groups, and would deepen the recognition by everyone of the increasingly diverse world we live in. I know there's curiosity. The Islamic Center's open house a few months ago had strong attendance. There is no group better positioned than we are to lead the effort to increase interfaith cooperation and understandings. First, one of our sources, the Wisdoms from the World's Religions, acknowledges that we find truth in all different faiths. As Jacob Trapp said, each of the great religions has a distinctive note to be likened to the strings of a harp. We have been persuaded that there are many paths to truth. And that gives us a connection point with others. We have acceptance from the moderate and progressive Christian community, but we also identify with those who are not Christian. So we are ourselves a bridge people. I don't know exactly what interfaith community in Manhattan might look like. I do find Abu Patel's approach inspiring, though. Patel, a Muslim and author of several books about religious pluralism in America, founded the Interfaith Youth Corps, which gets young adults from different faiths to do social action projects together and to talk about their religious convictions while supporting one another. Doing good together and sharing informally the reasons why we do it, what in our religious values pushes us to change the world, it feels like a duplicable model that could work in Manhattan to increase interfaith connection. We have to remember to what end we are building these bridges, to honor our shared humanity and common values. If we are to have peace, if we are to save our planet, if we are to improve the human condition, we need one another. Whatever culture, belief, faith, tradition, color, ethnicity, or identity, we all need one another. In these times, we're often confronted with our differences and told that that is the ultimate truth about humanity. But there's a different model. Yes, we're different. Our differences enrich us. At our depth, we do share a common humanity, though. As Shakespeare said so long ago, we are fed with the same food, hurt with the same weapons, subject to the same diseases, healed by the same means, warmed and cooled by the same winter and summer. Ultimately, we rise or fall together. We are indeed one human family. Our closing hymn is in the Teal Book. It's number 1018, Come and Go With Me. But if we do not, there is no agreement that can do us any good. Let us endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bonds of peace. So may it be.